I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order February 19th. Or no, it's February 25th. Excuse me. I was looking at the issue date. Committee, today we're going to be hearing two bills, House Bill 2481 and House Bill 2578. And before we get started, the bill we heard, was it 2470 on the... 2470. So a couple people have asked me whether I was having two work groups, and I am not. I'm having one work group with both my vice chairs participating in it. So just wanted to clarify that before we, for the committee's sake. So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2481. And Victoria, will you give us a preview of this bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2481 prohibits agreement for transfer of real property that impose fees or other consideration upon future transfers of the property, allows award of attorney fees to defendant prevailing in action for enforcement of prohibition. It will be effective on passage. It has no revenue or fiscal impact.
Thank you. And for a further description of the bill, we have signed up Sean Jillians from the Oregon Association of Realtors. Good afternoon and welcome to our committee. You'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors here in favor of or in support of House Bill 2481. As you just heard from Ms. Cox, House Bill 2481 does prohibit fees or the imposition of fees by third parties on transfers of real estate. To give you a little bit of background on the issue first, Mr. Chair, this was a trend that we saw emerging coming out of the state of Texas and California, where individual companies were going to homeowners and saying, wouldn't you like to share in the appreciation of your property in perpetuity or for at least 99 years, even if you no longer own the property? And so how the technique was used was they would go in and put a deed restriction on the property that said for every subsequent sale, they would get a percentage of the purchase price, typically a 1% transfer on all subsequent sales. The entity that was proposing this obviously would look after the covenant to make sure it was enforced, and for their efforts, they would take a percentage of that fee as well. Usually in the range of 50% or more of the money would go back to the third-party entity. Private transfer fees are a relatively new development in real property law, which tends to be rather historic and antiquated. And so this issue has sort of started to rear its head starting in 2007. The American Bar Association put out an article on it questioning the legality of it, but basically came to the conclusion until these things were more in place, no one could really tell for sure and challenge in state court if they were fully enforceable or not, because quite honestly, if a person transfers fee simple interest in their property to someone else but reserves something, did they truly transfer fee simple? Do they have any ownership stake going forward? It was a big problem. So the problems that we saw and why we actually came to you during the interim, Mr. Chair, to address this from a consumer protection standard is, one, these very often aren't disclosed. They are put in CC&Rs or in a deed restriction that is waived for the first purchaser and then kicks in the second one, so that people have no idea that they're in there. This obviously would present title issues for folks, that these outstanding deeds or servitudes are in place on there. It also poses problems for lenders, because lenders are going to be a little more hesitant to loan on properties that might have these restrictions, especially during these tough economic times where it is rather difficult to get a loan at this point in time. Having further hindrances is certainly concerning to us. And probably the biggest concern for us as an association is the affordability issue, too. If 1% of the transfer price is tacked on to these things, we've just now increased the cost of a house by, say, $2,500 on a $250,000 house. In addition to that, if one person says, well, what was that $2,500 I had to pay? Oh, well, someone created this private transfer fee back before you owned the property. Well, I want to get in on that. So now they tack on their own 1%, and it just continues on, and the cost of housing increases substantially. The bill is rather complicated. I'd be the first to admit that. The suggested language we submitted was three sentences. It's two pages now, as tends to be the case. I think LC did a very good job in trying to make sure that they covered everything, but in trying to cover everything, we had to start carving out exceptions to make sure we didn't cast a net that was too broad. There are exceptions in there for affordable housing provisions, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I've been in contact with members of the affordable housing community. We may need to tweak that language a little bit. Folks who represent community land trusts are concerned that we have not substantially taken them out of this equation, and it's certainly not our intention to impact community land trusts or how they operate in capturing equity as houses appreciate. So I have agreed to work with them. We plan on having an amendment ready for this committee very soon to bring back to you for your consideration. In addition, the representatives of the homeowners associations were concerned about the exception that's in there. It's not quite clean enough, and so we probably need to go in. We didn't take into account timeshares, and so that probably needs to be in there as well. And Representative Barton and I had a lengthy discussion about the attorney fee provision that's in there. One of those ones that can tend to, you know, be a lightning rod. And quite honestly, Mr. Chair, it was one of those ones that legislative counsel says, do you want it? And I said, sure, why not? Well, the way it's drafted is problematic at best. So in the amendment we bring to you, we'll either clean that up or we'll eliminate the attorney's fees provision. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Sean. I think you did a good job of laying out the what brought this bill forward, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate that you'll continue to work on the language with you know, stakeholders to make sure we don't negatively impact people unintendedly.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
So that's good. Questions, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. how many of these do we have in the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I don't have a definitive number for you. I have heard of some existing in the Central Oregon area where they're already in place, but the more troubling aspect I can tell you is that some of our members have received the promotional material from the company in Texas, and so they are marketing in the state now. As to how many are actually in place from that, I couldn't tell you, unfortunately. I think once transfers occur is when we'll start seeing these pop up.
Follow up.
I wasn't asking in order to say, you know, if we don't have these here, we don't need this law. What I was trying to get at is what happens to the ones that already exist if and when we put this into effect?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Will you be covering that in your amendments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, as much as I would love to give you the answer that we would invalidate all of them, the legislature cannot take action that would invalidate a valid contract. And so if these were valid contracts, and that's, as I mentioned previously, something for a court possibly to determine, but I do not see that we would invalidate any current ones that are in existence, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Barton, question?
Yes, thank you.
Excuse me, Sean. I apologize that he got here before you were finished. So,
go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sean, I was hoping you could explain to the committee the interface between this bill and the rule against perpetuities.
Mr. Chair, Representative
I'm just
Barton.
Kidding. I'm just sorry.
It's a miracle I passed the bar with that section on there. So I think
the hardest area of property law. It's terrible.
Representative Barton, did you have a serious question?
No, I did not, Mr. Chair.
Now we lucked out.
Teenagers on the panel.
Don't let him carry the bill.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, well, if we want it to pass. Any other questions from the committee? Sean, I appreciate your hard work on this and the Realtors Association for bringing this issue forward. I think it's a great consumer issue, and it's something I believe the state needs to take a look at and try to prevent from happening, and hopefully a court will take care of the ones that are already in existence, so as they pop up. So thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing those amendments just any day, I'm sure.
Very soon, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I will close the public. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2481? I didn't see anyone else signed up. I don't see anybody jumping up except the one person leaving. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2481.
I don't think I can hold it with my second card.
Committee, I'd like at this time to just go a little bit out of order. I want to open up a work session for possible consideration of committee bills. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 2270, dated 2209. LC 2643, dated 2-18-09, LC 3088, dated 2-23-09, and LC 3382, dated 2-23-09.
Thank you. Representative Riley moves LC 2270, 2643, 3088, 3382 to be introduced as committee bills. Committee, of course, this doesn't obligate you to support or oppose the bills. This is simply merely to allow the committee to introduce committee bills. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Show these LCs are so adopted. With that, I'll close the work session for consideration of committee bills and open a public hearing on House Bill 2578.
Dogs to parking.
Towing.
Oh, towing.
Victoria,
towing.
Would you please give us a description of the bill before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2578 requires parking facility owner to affix notice on vehicle and wait 2 hours before having vehicle towed. Obliges tower to release vehicle without charge if owner is present at the time of the tow. Provides for denial or revocation of towing business certificate for any tower that accepts or provides compensation based on the number of vehicles towed.
Thank you. Representative Riley,
thank you.
Would you like to give us a description of the bill beyond what Victoria has provided us?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you all know, this is a bill that I submitted, and I wanted everyone to know that there are already some amendments that are being drafted. I'm fully aware this is not a perfect bill, and I believe that the chair will later be asking for there to be a work group, and we'll work out some other details. But I wanted that out front so that we all know that that's what's going to happen.
Thank you, Representative Riley, and I appreciate your comments. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may address a question to Representative Riley.
Certainly.
Thank you. Representative Riley, can you give us some sense of what you're looking at in terms of amendments?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Right now, the amendments that I'm looking at are some exceptions for safety issues such as fire lanes, abandoned vehicles, and a few other safety issues. I'm also looking at but haven't addressed yet the length of time on the notice. That could be maybe excessive in some instances. And there are other issues that may come up. But those are the ones that I've thought of so far.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly. And it is my intention to have a work group that Representative Riley will head up, and if he wishes to have Representative Gilliam, if he doesn't object, participate, he could do that. In that as well, that would be...
I show up to these meetings.
That's right. That he would, I'm sure, be willing to do that. And I would expect that you would take in, you know, suggestions and ideas from interested parties on their objections or their solutions, other solutions that they might have, to take that into consideration and bring it back to the committee for consideration in some form.
And what we may hear this afternoon.
And we may hear a lot of them this afternoon. That's our intention. That's what our public hearing is for. Representative Krieger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, do I have to declare a conflict of interest if I've had my vehicle towed?
No, I'm sure lots of us have had that as a general class of people.
That's a large class.
So, but, of course, I would consult your particular favorite legal counsel on that question and not rely on my answer.
In that case, Mr. Chair, I can tell him the answer is no.
Boy, you jumped to conclusions quickly.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from a lawyer with a little bit more experience.
So anyway, we're going to move on here, and I appreciate the comments. With that, we have signed up. Do we want to go here? How about Mayor Mike Weatherby here?
Right here.
Oh, just in time. And Police Chief Ken Johnson, I want to be cognizant of your time. Welcome, gentlemen, and good afternoon to you. I appreciate you testifying on this bill before our committee today. And before you start with your testimony, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please. We don't need your address, though, just
Hi.
Your name.
Mike Weatherby, Mayor of the City of Fairview.
Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and committee members. I will be very brief. Franklin Roosevelt was once asked by James's oldest son, what makes a great speech? And he said three things: be sincere, be brief, be seated. So I like that. I'm very proud of the fact that our city passed an ordinance that is the model for this legislation. This is something that became very apparent to us and the needs of our community, and I think this is something that once you are aware of and done investigative work on this and you see what you're looking at and what this does to ordinary members of our community, that I think that the legislation speaks for itself. It is something that is really quite necessary, and I think this is the time and the place to have it happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the police chief for the city of Fairview, and I've also been authorized to speak on behalf of the president of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, that we collectively, the chief of police in the state, support this legislation. I'd like to speak and give you just a few examples and what prompted the city of Fairview to take some action. A resident in a low-income apartment complex was towed because he had backed into a parking space, apparently a violation of a park rule. A handicapped driver parked in front of a mobile home to pick up a set of crutches. By the time the handicapped driver returned to their vehicle, it was being hooked up to a tow truck and pulled away because it failed to park in their driveway. A handicapped resident of a mobile home park pulled into their driveway to unload some groceries. Apparently their parking area was too small. It extended out partially over the sidewalk. They left it there to unload groceries. By the time they made one trip into their house, a tow truck had pulled up and was in the process of towing their vehicle. an individual parked in an apartment complex to pick up a handicapped person. The driver parked in a parking space but was about 18 inches over the little white lines that separate the parking spaces. A tow truck responded and was watching and picked that vehicle up also, and the violation they cited was for taking up two spaces. I responded to that complaint. There were no other vehicles on either side of it for several spaces. The lack of discretion demonstrated by some, and I think it's important to emphasize some, tow truck operators has caused anger and frustration. That was brought into sharp focus on May 12, 2008, when the Fairview Police Department responded to an armed confrontation. An individual that was having his tow truck, his vehicle towed, was so upset because the tow truck driver refused to listen to him that he went in and obtained a shotgun and pulled a shotgun on the driver. That individual ultimately was arrested and charged with a crime. It was clear to us that something had to be done. After considerable research and discussion, an ordinance was prepared for the Fairview City Council to regulate certain towing practices in what is defined as private parking facilities. In testimony before our council, I made the following statement. The armed confrontation illustrates the level of frustration brewing and the necessity to regulate this practice before there is further violence. The ordinance was passed and became effective January 3, 2009. And I'm very pleased to report that since the passage of that ordinance, we've had absolutely zero complaints about so-called predatory towing practices in the city of Fairview. And we have multiple apartment mobile home complexes and businesses. I think it's important that you note, however, that the passage of this legislation will not stop tow companies from towing illegally parked vehicles in apartment complexes and mobile home complexes and businesses. The passage of this legislation will not jeopardize public safety, as what some will try to convince you. What it does is protect citizens from documented abuse by some, by a loosely regulated industry. They had the chance to police themselves, and they chose not to. It is now time for the legislature to protect our citizens by passing this important piece of legislation. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your comments. I might ask that you remain seated, and I want to listen to one more piece of testimony where some may have questions for you. Representative Denbro.
Thank you.
You would think so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michael Denbro, representative for House District 45, that's Northeast Portland to Park Rose, and I thank you for accommodating my schedule next door. First, I want to thank Representative Riley for his leadership on this issue. When he asked me to be a co-sponsor of the bill, I was very pleased to do so for a couple of reasons. My first reason is that this was an issue of passionate concern for my former senator, Senator Abel Gordley, whom I have a great deal of respect for. And I know that last session she worked hard on this issue, and a bill was passed that took us part of the way to where we need to go, and this bill will take us farther. So this is an issue that I've known about for quite some time. This is the way I know most of what I seem to know in life, and that's the writings of my students. You know, I teach at community college when I'm not here, and I teach a lot of low-income students and people who've had a variety of experiences. And sometime, probably about 10 years ago, I had a student in a writing class. The assignment was for them to write about a nightmare experience. So you can imagine what this one was about. She wrote about an experience that she had where she got a call from a family member who was in real distress. She raced over in her car to this family member's apartment complex and quickly parked her car, ran inside to deal with the situation. I don't remember exactly what, but there was a problem with the way she had parked. She dealt with the family member, and they needed she needed to take her somewhere. They went outside, and the car was gone. And she immediately assumed that her car had been stolen. One thing led to the next. She was, you know, really frantic. She eventually found out that the car had been towed, although I think the apartment manager didn't know about it. In fact, had not been around at that time. But she eventually did find out, and it cost her a lot of money to recover the vehicle that she frankly didn't have at the time. Ended up having to take out a payday loan, in order to redeem her car. It was quite a story. And actually, to be honest, at that time, I found it really hard to believe. And I wrote several times in the margin of her paper, "You're kidding. You're not serious." You know, I usually write more intelligent comments on papers, but we discussed. We actually discussed her paper as a class, and a number of students reported that they or people they knew had similar situations, and it was a real matter of concern. In this case, you know, this student she screwed up in her haste, and she was willing to pay for that, but this was clearly a case in which the penalty, both in terms of, you know, financial penalty to redeem her car and the emotional penalty of, you know, thinking that her car had been stolen and the difficulty of having to redeem it, you know, really exceeded the offense. You know, I would argue this is obviously particularly a problem for low-income people, but really no one should have to have the experience of having their car towed without their knowing about it, if at all possible. This bill has some excellent requirements for consumer protection in this area, moving us forward towards you know, the notification of the person whose car may be in jeopardy of being towed. And I would really urge this committee to move this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate you testifying on behalf of this bill. And I don't think that we're going to have any questions for you, so you can get back to your designated duties.
Thank you very much.
Have a good afternoon. Committee, was there anyone that had questions for the mayor and the chief of police from Fairview? Seeing none, I guess they're off the hook. Next up, we have Elkins, Kopp, and Wagner from the Oregon Tow Truck Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Tow Truck Association. With me today are three real people. I have the president of our association, Dina Kopp, Gary McCallum from Ray's Towing in Eugene, and Mike Wagner, former president and chairman of the board of the Oregon Tow Truck Association. And we would like to let the committee know that we would be anxious to be members of the work group. So I'd like to have that on the record. We'd like to address four issues that we will talk about in the work group as well. The first one deals with the owner of the facility having to affix a notice for the tower to remove the vehicle and waiting 2 hours before the vehicle can be towed. We understand there's amendments coming relating to certain aspects of that section, but we'd just like to broaden that scope. Not only are fire lanes necessary to get vehicles out of, but during the last session, we talked in our work group a lot about the violations in handicap zones, assigned parking spots, and parking where clearly marked not to, especially in front of recycling units and garbage sites. And those seem to be very popular places for people to park when they're not supposed to. Section 2 sub 1 of the bill talks about contacting the tower of the parking facility before towing the vehicle. We normally work closely with the apartment managers and those people on the present on the property. However, we think that we should use the word designee or the word agent in relation to that. Some of these lots are not owned by local people or people that are in the area that we could contact. So we'll also bring that concept up in the work group. The third section that we, the third point we want to talk about is in section 3, sub 1, where we, it says the owner or the operator of the motor vehicle is present at the time of the tow. The tower shall release the motor vehicle at no charge. We are concerned about the wording of this bill, the wording as it would keep the entire industry from using what practice that we call drop fee, especially during police tows such as hazards or abandons. So we would like to see the industry be able to continue using the drop fee, as we call it, and during these types of tows. The last point I'd like to make, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, has to do with the wording in Section 4, Sub 8, which talks about the compensation piece. We read this two ways. One, in relation of the tower and the property owner compensation. And two, the one I'd like to talk about today, on a commission basis. This section, we believe, as written, would apply to our whole industry. And many in our industry, especially the mom-and-pop companies, use a commission-type system to pay their employees. We would hope that this language could be changed to allow them to reimburse their employees as they currently do. We have concerns that this language could affect how motor clubs pay us now or in the future. And so with that, I'd be glad to answer. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Mr. Chair, I did email a copy of this testimony to the committee members. However, while I was sitting and listening to testimony previously, I may have emailed it to the wrong committee. So I will attempt to do that again later this evening or first thing in the morning. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your comments. Anybody else that would like to testify?
They're here to answer any questions that you might have, and I know Gary from Race Towing would like to talk a little bit about the drop fee piece.
Okay, questions from the committee? Representative Callan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you could explain your last point a little bit. I'm not sure that I fully understood it about the compensation
Right now, currently, the bill says that tower cannot reimburse for the number of vehicles towed. And I'll let these folks explain to you how that system currently works in our industry.
Well, I'm Mike Wagner. I'm with the Oregon Tow Truck Association. I'm my company is Sani M Towing up in Lyons, up Highway 22 direction. So, when companies that pay on commission typically take the proceeds from the tow and pay the driver a percentage of that, that's the compensation method. As far as we know, the Bureau of Labor of Industries is okay with that as a form of compensation. It's pretty common in many industries. Car salesmen use it. Many sales types professions use it. But we're having a little trouble seeing how that last article applies to commission towing, but Representative Riley has assured us that it does. So we're just concerned that commission towing for the whole industry not be excluded over what appears to be a property owner and a property owner issue with the legislature in terms of what the property owners are able to have done for them in terms of services. So we think it's an appropriate method of payment if a company chooses to do so. It appears to be legal. And we just don't want it to be so broad that the rest of the industry doesn't able to use that technique of payment. So,
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a comment about that. One of the problems that I see with commission drivers is it influences their judgment. And if I'm a tow truck driver and I'm paid by the number of cars I tow in, and I go to a facility that has a contract or doesn't, and I pick up a car, if it's questionable whether it's, you know, illegal or not, I'm going to err on the side of picking it up and taking it in. It's a monetary idea right there. You know, it's pretty simple. I think everyone can see that's what would happen. And let me give you an example of where that's been dealt with. And that's in the gathering of signatures on petitions for putting bills on initiatives on ballot. And it's been deemed that that's an invalid way. Paying by the signature causes fraud. And I think the same thing applies in this case. I think paying by the toe encourages fraud. So that's why it's in the bill. And that was my
If I might
reasoning.
Just respond, I understand your logic. I understand the path you're following. It appears to me that the bill already takes the decision to tow the car out of the hands of the tow driver. It seems to me that once you take the decision to tow the car out of the hands of the tow driver, there's no longer any economic incentive by the method of pay, because you've already taken that decision from him by the earlier part of the bill. So I understand in the current system how you say maybe there's a logical connection. I think that if you're going to limit the ability for the tow driver to choose his tow, then I don't think that there's any longer any connection there. So
okay.
Do most tow truck drivers operate on commission? Do you have a sense of that?
Many of our Dina Kopp, president of the Oregon Tow Truck Association, many of our companies do use commission basis, and there needs to be an incentive for guys to get up at 2 in the morning and leave their house and family. My company, we don't do patrol towing. We only do dispatched calls, so we have to be called for any tows. My police tows in the middle of the night. I have two drivers that are on commission because they work for us. I've got a firefighter and a mechanic that works for us after hours. They're paid commission based on the tow. It's a set rate by our county, Washington County, and they get a percentage of that call. It works well for them because that gives them the impetus to get up and get out and meet the times that are required for us by the police departments.
So do they receive a base pay while they're on call? Just out of curiosity.
We pay based on, we give them for every call, but they get 25% of the call. The Washington County hookup rate is $170.
I guess my question was, do they receive a base pay just for being available?
Wages.
No.
Okay. Interesting. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, and I'm sure Representative Riley will probably get a hold of you when he figures out what schedule the work group looks like it'll be taking place in. Next up, I have Mark Ross, Wally Duncan, Alan Cox, and Elon Tan.
All at once,
yeah. There's four seats. I think I called four people. Welcome to the committee, and if whoever would like to go first would just identify themselves for the record.
Okay. Get close to this. Is that picking me up?
Apparently. Oh, yes.
Okay. My name's Alan Cox. I'm from the Gresham area. I'd like to express my appreciation to have this meeting and this bill that's being proposed, and of course the chair and the representatives here to listen to it. Most of them, I believe, are here just to explain some situations that we had, and had several. One was my son and I went to the Always in April swap meet, which occurs at the PIR, and it was very busy that particular year, and parking was almost non-existent. So we went down about a block or so from the complex and pulled into a warehouse parking lot, and there was no one there. It was a Sunday. The business was closed, and we had each driven separately, so we had two cars. And after a short time, a couple hours, I decided to leave, and I went back to where we'd parked the cars, and there still was no other cars there, but also my son's car was missing. And he had what is commonly known as a muscle car. He had a Pontiac convertible. And I assumed it was stolen because I was driving an economy car that I didn't even want, let alone anybody else. And so I ran back to the PIR where I knew the police had an office and was trying to report it being stolen, and that's when I learned that it had been towed. So I used my cell phone to get a hold of my son, and we were then running back to my car to go retrieve his, and my car was gone. And in this situation, you know, there was a lot of problems with it in terms of, you know, they left us stranded for one, and then we had to make an appointment to go get our car, and they charged, of course, a gate fee for each of us, even though they only opened the gate once. And also on the process of finding out that his was towed and then going back to mine, we went by a small lot that they had been charging people to park in. It was like $5 to park, and you got a receipt to put on the dash. And the second time I came back through there, that lot was empty, and there were some people standing there, and they had all had their cars towed, and they were told that the person that sold them the ticket to park there didn't have the right to do so, and so the tow company had towed them all. And the guy that was the most angry was saying he had recognized the fellow that he purchased his ticket to park there as a tow truck driver that he had used a few weeks earlier. Whether that was connected or not, but it sure looked suspicious. But the drawbacks to it just show that, you know, the kind of aggressiveness to it. The following Monday, I went to the business and asked them why they had cars towed when they aren't even open on Sunday or Saturday. And they said, we don't care if you park there. But the property owner had the agreement with the tow company because the two were friends between the owner and the tow truck company owner. And then probably one that kind of fits in with one of the stories we just heard the tow truck operators complain about was a drop fee. I was living in an apartment complex that was a little unusual. They were individual houses with detached garages. And the garage that was next to mine was rented by somebody else, so I rented the one across the street. And there was a young woman that came to visit her very sick uncle. He was sick enough, he died 3 days later. And she had parked in my parking spot. Well, the property manager patrolled that parking lot day and night, literally 24/7. And he did check with me to see if that car belonged to me or somebody that I knew. And I said, no, but I don't mind. It's not bothering me. Oh, it doesn't matter, he said. He had the tow truck company come and pick the car up. And they hadn't actually picked the car up yet when the lady came out. And she argued with him, you know, basically saying, I was just here to see my sick uncle, and I'm ready to move. And they charged her $160 to let her move. They were backed up to her where she couldn't get out until they moved. And so basically it was $160 for nothing. And I, as the one that had the right to the spot, did not complain. And it's those kinds of things that are very unfortunate. That particular situation occurred about 10 years ago. And $160 is bad now, but it was even worse 10 years ago. And the girl had a very hard time coming up with it. She actually got the cash from her uncle because she had none. And, of course, they demand cash, at least then, and I assume they do now, because most people don't have it. And then they get the whole tow fee and the gate fee and, you know, the storage fee and all those things they would normally get. This girl, in a way, lucked out for just $160 because her uncle had the cash. And, you know, listening to the representatives of the tow industry, all the things that they talked about having changed totally got the bill. It just doesn't exist if any leeway was given to them on their points.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Neiman Ross, and I'd just like to speak completely in favor of the two-hour notification part of it. You probably have a letter in front of you. It's actually a copy of a letter that I used to discuss the case with the bank that his car was towed from. I'm sorry, my son's car was towed from. There's a lot of pontification in there that we can quickly skip over. Most importantly is the second page where it establishes the timeline of the event of the tow and documents the actual times involved. Essentially what it boils down to is my son parked the car, used the ATM, decided to go across the street to Fred Meyer's to buy some party supplies, came back within probably 18 to 20 minutes to find his car was up on a tow. Well, my son is, 17. He doesn't have $160 to get the car out, so the next thing I know, I'm now rescuing a car from a tow. If we had had 2 hours notification, well, first of all, he wouldn't have been there 2 hours. He was only there for 30 minutes. If we'd had 2 hours, I could have easily resolved the situation. Number one, Aaron does happen to be a bank customer for that bank. So the argument that he was not there doing bank business is it's pretty dodgy around the edges. It alarms me that there is this kind of behavior going on. It's almost like legalized carjacking. And I did talk with the bank manager, and he says, well, what happens is that we've been able to remove a lot of the drug dealing and a lot of the miscreant behavior in that parking lot by hiring the tow truck drivers. It occurs to me that you can do the same thing by hiring a security firm. It also occurs to me that they've almost replaced one form of miscreant behavior with another semi-legalized form of miscreant behavior. So, with that, I have all the documentation from you. I'm happy to answer any questions you have, but I think that essentially makes my point. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Riley, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and state tell my story. I'm completely in favor of House Bill 2578.
You could identify yourself for the record,
sorry.
Please.
I'm Elaine Tan from Portland.
Here.
I was a realtor for 16 years. Back on the morning of Sunday, June 5th, 2005, I had an appointment with another realtor of the Hassan Company on Northwest 23rd and Burnside to present an offer on the property that was listed for sale. I parked in the front lot at approximately 10:10 a.m., and realizing I was a little bit early, I decided to walk across the street to Cameo Cafe to pick up a cup of coffee. There must have been no more than 10 vehicles parked in the lot at that time, so the entire lot was very empty. I noticed a man looking rather suspicious, who turns out to be a parking auditor hired by the building owner. He was walking right in front of one of the storefronts, and he watched me park my car, get out, and walk across the street to the cafe. There was a line at the cafe, so it took me 15, 20 minutes. When I returned to the lot to get my folder to proceed to the meeting at Hassan, who was a tenant of that parking lot, my car was gone. I was shocked. I thought my car had been stolen. By then, there was a parking attendant in a neon vest directing the traffic through the parking lot. I asked her, and I was informed that my car must have been towed, that I could probably retrieve my vehicle at the towing company about 15 to 18 blocks away. She told me that this was a constant occurrence and had caused a lot of inconveniences for them. I was fortunate that the other realtor was able to give me a ride to the tow yard. At the towing company, I was told that I could not park there while conducting business elsewhere, meaning the cafe, although the Hassan realtor confirmed that I was in fact meeting at their offices. I couldn't understand why they had towed my vehicle even though I was conducting businesses with one of the tenants, and how on earth were they able to call, drive over to the lot, hitch up my car, and drive away within that 15 minutes. At the time, I didn't realize I was watched and I was targeted. The fine was $177, and it was the hardest $177 I've ever had to pay. It wasn't about money, it was the principle. Upon returning to the shopping center for my meeting, The parking attendant in the neon vest confirmed that the guy that I saw that looks suspicious works for a private parking auditor company, auditing company, and was one of the was the person who called in all the tows. He was by then busy taking photographs of the vehicles parked at the lot, and he was told not to be surprised. I was told I not to be surprised if he actually took a photo of me walking away from my vehicle. The point is, if he could see and photograph me walking away from my vehicle, he could just as well been say, "Excuse me, ma'am, you cannot park here if you're going to walk across the street." That is the nature, the predatory nature of this process. By the time I was done with my meeting, I saw that the tow trucks were back, hitching up additional cars. While I understand the management's efforts to monitor unlawful parking on a property, the management should also recognize and correct an obvious error when one has been made. I talked with the property manager on Monday, June 6th. He tried unsuccessfully to get the towing company to refund me the tow fee. He told me that the parking policy was created and enforced by three parties: the building owner, the parking monitoring company, and the tow company. I called the manager at the tow company and left a message. 2 days later, he returned my call with a very accusatory tone and very patronizing to me. After my insistence that I get a full refund because I was, in fact, conducting business with one of the tenants, he finally reluctantly said he will pay me, refund me a partial credit. Out of courtesy, but he insisted that I broke the laws by stepping off the parking lot property. He said, and I quote, "If you park your car there and you see a friend walk by, you step off the property for even 2 minutes, even if it's within 5 feet of the property, to greet your friend, you have violated the rules and your car will be towed." And this is a direct quote from him. Apparently, as I found out later, the parking auditor company and the tow company owners are related. They're father and son. I also contacted many, if not most, of the tenants of that building, and they told me that this is a scam that has negatively impacted their business. The tenants had even signed a petition requesting the building owner to relax their overly aggressive parking enforcement policies. On a couple of occasions since then, I have actually sat at the outdoor area of the Cameo Cafe and observed people, some elderly, some with young children, infant with strollers, park their cars at that lot and walk over to the restaurant. I have actually approached them and told them to move their vehicles or it will be towed. I did so because I couldn't imagine being an elderly person walking with a cane or in a wheelchair, or a parent with young children and strollers, to find the car missing after they enjoyed their breakfast. I filed a complaint with the Better Business Bureau, the State Attorney General's Office, the Portland City Commissioner's Office. I wrote letters to the media. I had the privilege of testifying at a hearing in front of the Senate Commerce Committee, in front of Senator Abel Gordley on January 31st of 2007, when she introduced Senate Bill 388, 389, and 390. Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, and members of this committee, I'm sure you will and continue to hear many similar horror stories just like mine. Predatory towing simply must be stopped. It is not a business. It's a scam. Oregonians need to be protected, and we are counting on you all to do so. Thank you for your time and your efforts in doing what is right and what is fair for the citizens of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey. My name is Wally Duncan. I live in Hillsboro, Oregon. I want to thank this entire committee for considering this legislation. Back, I fumed over this for 6 years. Just to be able to say something to somebody about it is a great relief. In December of 2003, shortly after my grandson was born, my son-in-law came home from work, and he lives in an apartment complex in Forest Grove. They have numbered spaces and guest spaces. His numbered space was full, as were all the guest spaces, but he parked at a, area at the end of the guest spaces. It's not marked non-parking. It's not in the way of a fire lane, anything of that nature, and went up to his apartment. He did leave the vehicle that night. Granted, he should have got down there and checked to see if his vehicle space was open, but the next morning he went out to get in his car to go to work. His car was gone. He went to the tenants. Managers there, they know his car, and they said they didn't know what happened to it. It was probably towed by the tow company. Tow company was contacted, and we didn't have the money. My son-in-law didn't have the money to pick it up, so it sat in storage. On January 4th, the tow company and I had a conversation, and at that time, less than a month later, the bill was $1,060-some for this car, to retrieve this car. They were going to take my son-in-law and daughter to court to sue them for the money for the storage. Ultimately, it was settled by paying the $135 original tow bill and giving the tow company the car, their only car. Had they had to have notification of the manager before towing that, it would have never been towed. The manager had no idea what happened to that car, and this bill would have prevented them from losing their car.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. I'll be brief. Mr. Cox, I want to welcome you to the state capitol. You're out there in the heart of Gresham right there in my neighborhood, so appreciate you making the 57-mile drive. And for everybody's testimony, I apologize for coming in a little late. I was testifying down the hall. But this is an important issue, and we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about just tow companies regulating tow companies, that's different than predatory towing, obviously. Tow companies have very much value in the community, and as a firefighter, I appreciate when we call, and police officers do too. But we're talking about when they're predatory. So I appreciate all your input, and I know we'll hear from tow companies too. Reading your testimony, Mr. Cox, you've offered some other solutions in addition. I'm sure we'll consider that. But I want to thank you and also tell you that you're not alone in this. Unfortunately, actually, as a firefighter, we were working on an apartment fire in the Fairview area, and our fire marshal parked his vehicle across the street from the fire. Keep in mind, it's a red Chevy Cavalier with a gumball light on the dashboard. It was towed. So we have to address this issue. And, he first interviewed just about every firefighter on scene thinking we had something to do with it, but no, it was towed. And we ended up, with the help from our local police authority, we ended up getting that situation remedied that night. I understand most citizens don't have that opportunity to call the 911 system and use it in that capacity. So I appreciate your comments today, and thanks again for coming to the Capitol.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. And from Hillsborough, my area, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to ask people to be sure and have their cell phones turned off. And I'd like to have it understand...
Miss a toe.
Marty Oppenlander, Brian Gross, Gary McClellan, and Stephen Preston.
Some of these are pretty terrible stories. Yeah.
Representative Riley and committee, I'm Marty Oppenlander. I'm the owner of Hillsborough Towing, and I would like to address the commission issue. We pay our drivers on a salary and commission basis. During the day, my drivers are all on salary, and nights and weekends are on commission, and there's a lot of reasons we do this. The main reason is we use an off-premise dispatch center, which is Metro West Ambulance, and it'd be almost impossible for us to keep track of the exact time they're on the call to pay them. By using the commission system, it's been a win-win thing for 30 years for Hillsborough Towing. Every call that we do is dispatched, and every call that we run, the invoices are looked at the next day by either our dispatchers or our managers, so there's no price gouging. But it's a system that if we didn't do it that way, you know, the driver would say he cleared at 8 o'clock, we say he cleared at 7:30, you know, he may have stopped at his house or he may have stopped at his girlfriend's or whatever, and it's impossible for us to keep track of this. And it's a system that... isn't broken in 99% of the tow companies, and I would like to encourage you not to change our way of doing business so we can continue to do the job that we're doing now. Thank you.
Your trucks have been in my house several times. So
is that a good thing?
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. You've been helpful. Whoever would like to go next, go ahead.
Representative Riley, Chair, and members of the committee, my name is Byron Gross. I'm with 99 Towing in Tigard, Oregon. We've been around since 1946, and we also do not do patrol towing. However, the commission issue does affect our business, as we have, as some of the other testimony has presented. We have drivers that have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. There's some sort of motivation for them. There's the impetus. We have motor clubs that our drivers. I believe that this bill, as presented, will remove any of that private property towing. It removes that incentive from the driver. In that case, I don't believe it will affect us. But what concerns me is the compensation as far as paying by that manner. It would affect our company, even though our calls are dispatched. We do a lot of car clubs. We do a lot of work that people are calling us asking for assistance, and not being able to pay on a commission basis would negatively impact us.
I understand.
Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Riley, other representatives, excuse me, my name is Steve Preston. I'm the president of Sargent's Towing in Portland. I thought I was going to be a little bit late getting here because as I pulled up, I noticed there wasn't a lot of parking around, and I could have easily parked in many of the parking facilities in and around the courthouse that have signs up saying don't park here or else. And had this bill been enacted today, I know that I would have had a two-hour grace period to, as long as I'm out of here within 2 hours, I could have parked there and come back and gotten my car back at no charge and wouldn't worry have to worry about it being towed. So, but I did. I actually went 3 or 4 blocks away and found a meter and plugged the meter and parked legally. Up until now, all I've heard this morning is people talking about tow companies taking advantage of citizens. And what you need to be aware of as representatives is that there are other people out there. Citizens sometimes, believe it or not, take advantage of property owners. They take advantage of business owners. They take advantage of residents of multifamily parking units by abusing the parking and pulling into spaces that are clearly marked that it's for tenants only, for customers only, for any other purpose other than just to use at your free will. I'm here today not more as a representative of Sargent's Towing, but more as a representative of the thousands of business owners, multifamily housing complexes that we tow for, property owners, et cetera, around the Portland area. Chapter 98 of the Oregon Statute is the only statute that helps them protect illegally parked vehicles on their property. It's the only thing they have. There are volumes and volumes and volumes of ordinances that affect parking and driving on city and public streets, but they only have Chapter 98 of the Oregon Statutes. That's it. Otherwise, anybody can abuse their property. An example that I have for you is in the city of Portland, there is a city block. There's a Denny's restaurant at 425 Northeast Haslow, right across from the convention center, just down the street. They take up a whole half of a city block. They can seat 137 people inside, and they have approximately 40 parking spaces in their lot. Approximately 20 years ago, by the way, they've been there since for about 40 years. Approximately 20 years ago, the city of Portland allowed approved zoning for them to build a Red Robin restaurant in the other half of the city block. So they're right next door to each other. There's a simple fence that separates the two lots. The Red Robin can seat over 200 people, and the city approved them to build that with 12 parking spaces. And there is no city parking on all three sides of that Red Robin restaurant. One of those parking spaces is a disabled spot. The other 11 are for anybody else that wants to go in there. Since that time, it has caused a huge problem and burden for the Denny's restaurant for people abusing their parking and going next door to Red Robin. So they have had a tow company come through there, and we actually do patrol that lot. We post monitors on that lot for them at no charge to them. There are signs, there are approximately 15 signs on that parking lot that say, Denny's parking only, no Red Robin parking, Denny's customers only while doing business. This lot monitored 24 hours a day. Despite that fact, there are also two signs permanently painted on the front doors of Red Robin, as you go in the front doors of Red Robin, that say, no Denny's parking. Besides that, if you manage to get past the 15 signs and past the two signs on the front door of Red Robin and you get seated at the table, they will put a little piece of paper down on your table that says, if you parked at Denny's next door, don't go move your car because it will be towed. I can tell you that despite all of those rules and all of those safeguards that are in place, we have towed up to 100 cars a month out of that Denny's lot for people that abuse their parking, the majority of those people being Red Robin customers. If you include this chapter 2, the section 2 of paragraph 2 of section 1 of this, and give people a 2-hour grace period to park their car wherever they want, you are going to take away the rights of all businesses in the state of Oregon to control people that can thumb their nose at business owners and property owners that can park their car on their lot and not care about any consequences as long as you can go over there and get a bite to eat and have an appetizer and return to your car within 2 hours, you're safe. You don't have to worry about a thing. And if you pass this one simple paragraph, you're going to take all the teeth out of Chapter 98 for all business owners, property owners, some of you that may even live in multifamily apartments or maybe condominiums, and you have your assigned parking space for your car only, and you get home after a long day here in the Capitol, and somebody's in your spot, you're going to have problems. You're going to have to go find someplace else to park because somebody else has taken advantage of your spaces. And so I would really like to be involved in the work group on this. I help support the Department of Justice bill that came about 2 years ago. I don't remember the bill number, but I supported most of the issues in that. I was involved in that work group, and I think a lot of good things happened out of that bill. But this simply goes too far, and it needs to be modified. Thank you. I'm free to answer any questions that you have.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary McClellan from Ray's Towing in Eugene, the Secretary of the Oregon Tow Truck Association. I don't do any private property impounds, and I pay by the hour. But my concerns are with the so-called drop fee. It doesn't give any specific language for agency tows. An example would be a storage on the street vehicle. We're given 8 hours to go and tow that vehicle, and there isn't an agent representative there. If you're there hooking it up and the owner of the vehicle comes out and said, that's my vehicle, does that mean that we need to drop that vehicle and not collect any monies?
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Absolutely, Representative Tony.
You used a phrase that I'm not familiar with, something about an agent.
Agency towing would be police agency towing.
Oh, got it. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
An example may be ODOT for a disabled vehicle off of the freeway. That would be another example of this possibly affecting our business. If you had a vehicle that was off of the road and required some time to get it back onto the road to tow it, if a person was driving it, a friend was driving the vehicle, and in this meantime they call the owner and the owner comes, so that's my car, I've already arranged for towing, you spent X amount of time pulling this vehicle back to the road and getting it ready for tow and then not being compensated for that work. That would be
okay. Questions? Representative Wingard.
Steve, thank you for your testimony today. I have been listening now for a little over an hour and reading all the letters that came by email and the ones that people have testified today. And I believe there's a common thread to all of this, and there's a reason why we're all in this room having this fight. We've been set against each other, essentially, property owners and car drivers. And it has to do with the fact there's a lack of parking spaces. The common denominator in everything that I heard here was that people can't find a space, and they end up having to make do, and then the conflict ensues. A lot of this goes directly to some of our land use planning rules and central planning that goes on that specifically results in a lack of available parking spaces for people to conduct business and to get around. And I think, Steve, your examples, and I have been to both the Denny's and the Red Robin there, and I have experienced that problem of going to Red Robin. They have 12 spaces. And, you know, what you're doing is ensuring that 100 people or more are going to be struggling to find space somewhere else to park. And wherever they choose to park, we're just essentially pushing that burden onto someone else. And those property owners get frustrated, and they employ towing companies, and the fighting begins. So with apologies to Mark Twain, it appears in this state water is for drinking and parking spaces are for fighting about. And I would just suggest that we have, as a government, created this problem. And I understand how frustrating it is for everybody that they end up towed. And I'm not sure that we're actually getting at the solution with this bill, but I obviously something's going to move. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to the fact that when people go to apartment complexes, I have apartment complexes in Wilsonville. I used to live in one, Canyon Creek, that's exactly like this. There's just basically enough spaces for the tenants, and there are a sprinkling of spaces left over for visitors. You have hundreds of people living in that apartment. They have all sorts of people that want to come visit them and hang out with them, and there is no parking available for them. And so you're going to continue to get this conflict no matter what rules we pass on towing. I mean, and we'll just sit here and continue to have this fight session after session. We'll make onerous rules on towing companies, and then we're going to hear from the property managers in the next session saying, we got people parking all over, what are we going to do about it? And then we're going to move the ball back the other way and hear from people who are being towed until we start supplying more parking spaces or freeing up these rules so that people can supply more parking spaces. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you accommodating me on
Thank
that.
Thank you, Representative Wingard.
Yes, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Vice Chair Riley. Each of us as legislators have a little spot in the basement. Got our name out, legislator only, Krieger. Thought came to my mind what would happen if I parked in the Speaker of the House's place every morning. Probably the first day he'd ask me to leave. Probably the second day he'd send the state police, and the third day I'd probably get towed. So there's... It's a difficult situation. I think the availability of parking is a concern we're going to have to deal with.
Thank you. Other questions? thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'm going to call Mike Meyer and Sean Cruz.
What's my office? I didn't do it anymore.
Members of the committee, Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Sean Cruz. Thank you for bringing this legislation forward. I do have some, I think we plan to have Mr. Meyer speak first. I've got some photographs for you to see that will illustrate his parking experience. And I'm not familiar with how the technology works.
Mr. Chair and Representative Riley and members of the committee. I'm basically here to tell my story. I was back in April 13th of 2008. I parked in a handicapped parking place, or what I assumed was a handicapped parking place in Portland. Remind you, I'm a business professional for the past 11 years in Portland, as well as I've attended a local university here in Salem. Now, I do see a problem that we have a lack of parking places, and one thing that happens to me is when I'm trying to find a place to park, I park in, sometimes I have to park on the street, I'll have to get, open my door into traffic and get my wheelchair out to get in and out of my vehicle. It's actually dangerous. So when I see a handicapped parking place, you know, it becomes really valuable for me. In this case, I was driving along where the waterfront is in downtown Portland. I wanted to simply take a wheel on a Sunday afternoon. I saw these handicapped parking places, so I pulled into one. I saw a whole bunch of different signs. It was confusing. I hadn't seen these parking places here before, which was kind of new to me. I later found out that those parking places were temporarily shut off and the parking lot was reopened. It turned out for 9 months the tow company was actually towing vehicles without permission from there. It turns out to be a lot of money that is taken from the consumer, and the tow company is not forced to pay that back. And it seems to me in other types of situations that a business would be fined if they're doing something against the law, or, you know, forced to pay this money back. In this case, it took me about 6 months, and I finally got my funds returned to me. I submitted some information. Basically, so I want to show a timeline, and it has some statements that I made in the beginning of this process when I initially got my car towed, so it has my thoughts are fresh there, as well as a rebuttal from the tow company, basically knocking down everything that I had stated in my complaint. So again, I'm just here to tell my story. As a citizen that I feel I was abused and my vehicle was towed illegally. Thank you.
Vice Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Sean Cruz. I'd like to elaborate on Mr. Meyer's experience. And these photographs, during the interim, and I was Senator Gordley's chief of staff, I took a phone call from Mike the day after his car was towed. When he described to me this forest of signs down there in front of McCall's, which is public property, I went down there and took these pictures that very same day. So these pictures are taken the day after his vehicle was towed. And there's, I don't know how many signs there are that all say different things. You've got signs that say permit parking only. They don't identify what kind of permit is needed. There are two spaces there that are designated for people with handicapped placards, which Mr. Meyer's vehicle is equipped with. It's got a lift. Those spaces, you have to have not only a disabled permit, but you have to have a McCall's permit. And McCall's has been empty for a year, vacant, a vacant building, publicly owned for a year. That is a publicly owned parking lot. So there aren't any McCall's permits. And in fact, at the time we took this complaint, that tow company had not had a contract to patrol that lot with the city of Portland for 6 months. They towed approximately 60 vehicles during that time with no authority to post their signs or to patrol the lot whatsoever. Now, as far as we know, out of all those drivers, Mr. Meyer is the only one that got his money back. And it took 6 months from the day he was towed before they finally relented and gave him his money back. The position that the tow truck company took, which is in the documentation he's provided to the committee, from the tow company, says that if he wanted to avoid getting towed on that Sunday afternoon, then he should have called the tow company and asked them for a McCall's permit, which again did not exist. So that is the level
that we're talking about here. And actually, Mr. Meyer confided to me yesterday that he hasn't been back to McCall's Park since this occurred. So, now I'd like to get to my own testimony. My name is Sean Cruz. I'm a resident of Park Rose neighborhood in northeast Portland. I served as Senator Avell Gordley's legislative aide and chief of staff through representing Senate District 23 throughout the 2003, 05, and 07 legislative sessions. I also claim the distinction of having Portland's number one predatory towing horror story, which I write about on my blog. I led Senator Gordley's Senate Bill 431 group on patrol towing reforms, and I represented her office in the Attorney General's Senate Bill 116 work group led by Ivan Novick. Senate Bill 116 incorporates several of Senator Gordley's legislative concepts.
Mr. Chair.
Both bills passed
Sean,
the House.
Representative Toomey.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yes. Chair. Sean, you have 9 pages of testimony.
I'm not going to read it all.
Great. I like you a lot, but yes. I can read this really
yeah.
fast.
Yeah, I'm not going to read it all.
Thank you.
Both bills passed the House and Senate with unanimous votes in committee on the floor, but fell just short of Senator Gordley's goal, which was to model California statute requiring the property owner or manager to be present at the time of the tow and sign the invoice. In order to promote the safety and well-being of members of the general public, California's law also held the advantage of having been recently upheld by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Prior to the 07 legislative session, Oregon's patrol towing industry was largely unregulated, and there was a lack of clarity in Oregon statutes as to whether the state and local governments had the authority to regulate businesses built around the involuntary towing of citizens' private vehicles. The Attorney General, for example, had no explicit authority to even receive complaints from the public, much less act on them. This fact was enormously frustrating to many Oregon citizens who often found that the local police were also stymied with no authority over patrol towing. There was a widespread assumption that federal law regarding interstate commerce preempted state and local governments, and on this basis, patrol towing metastasized over several decades, seemingly untouchable, answerable to no authority in this state. It was literally the Wild West here in Oregon, the only state on the West Coast that has not banned patrol towing. It's only here that this problem exists. The first thing we had to do in 07 was to establish the authority of the state and local government to regulate. Thanks to the research of a constituent, Tim Barrett, whose car was patrol towed less than 5 minutes after his arrival to visit his son in a Fairview apartment, we found what we needed. In 2005, in Tillotson versus the City of San Diego, the U.S. Ninth District Court of Appeals found that California's law curbing patrol towing was designed to promote the safety of the general public who might be stranded or whose family might be stranded under unsafe circumstances and of the tow drivers themselves and is therefore exempted from the federal preemption. Testimony from a number of citizens during the tow bill hearings demonstrated that this was happening frequently, including separating drivers from prescription medications and leaving people in wheelchairs stranded on the sidewalk. This regulatory authority, in the language used by the federal court, comprises Section 1 of Senate Bill 116, clarifying the exemption regarding the regulation of involuntary towing, including the price thereof, which extends to the issue of commission pay. Paragraph 2 of 116 states that the Legislative Assembly declares that statutes that assist members of the public in avoiding involuntary loss of use of motor vehicles and in expediting recovery of motor vehicles and personal property in the motor vehicles promote the safety and welfare of members of the public. City of Fairview is the first municipality in the state to actually act on that authority. And this body has that authority to regulate involuntary towing. So, It was not my personal predatory patrol towing horror story that brought Senator Gordley to see a need for legislative action. Although when they broke my transmission that Saturday afternoon, towing my vehicle out of my own driveway.
Sean, can you summarize it and wrap it up? Because you're continuing to read the testimony, which we have
in front
of us. We got a lot of people to testify. So if you could just summarize real quick and make a conclusion here, I'd appreciate it. And I'll tell you, we will read your testimony, or at least I will anyway.
Okay, thank you. If you would just turn to attachment A, this illustrates the problem as we saw it coming in. Two invoices, same towing company. Both of these vehicles were towed from my own driveway on a Saturday morning. Day after my absentee landlord neighbor had started a patrol towing contract to cover two triplexes with a parking area that's adjacent to my home, but I park on my own property with no notice to the neighbors, not even any notice to the tenants affected by the patrol towing contact. Those people just started showing up and towing vehicles. Now, normally we're dealing with an incident of one vehicle being towed at a time. You're only going to see one invoice. But here's two vehicles towed from the same place, same time, same circumstances, same company, and yet the prices are different, the line items are different. In the upper one, which is covered by the City of Portland, regulated by the City of Portland, those are the only fees that are allowed in the City of Portland. However, the one at the bottom is charging me $33 a day for storage, while the city one says it's $20 a day. What you have down there is a field with all these, a form with all these open fields that the driver can just write in whatever numbers he likes. And what we learned there is that the towers were exploiting a line in ORS statute that prevented municipalities from regulating parking facilities if they held 10 or fewer vehicles. And that one behind my house only held 7. I heard in the work group the owner of that towing company shouted at me that the city had no regularity authority in that parking lot. Well, they do now. They absolutely do now. And so what one of the goals we wanted to get to with 116 and 431 was to eliminate the practice of commission-paid tow drivers or other employees of the tow company from pulling numbers out of the air. We know, we have anecdotal information that they're not doing this. This committee passed this law in 07. You gave them formal notice then that you were going to look at what they did in the interim and decide how to deal with this in 09. They're not complying with the provision of providing a printed rate sheet to every vehicle owner that they can come in contact with. They're required to do that, and they're not doing it. That was illustrated by the infamous case in Wilsonville where the woman fleeing the assault victim, they wanted to tow her vehicle, but neither the president of the towing company or the police themselves could really know how much was the driver trying to charge this woman. No one knew that. Days later, and you know, you can see on the news, no one knew how much it was. 116 requires them to give that driver a printed rate sheet with the printed prices on it. They're not doing that. Another thing we learned, and this is from the numerous calls that Senator Gordley's office took over the interim from citizens from all over the metro area that were having their cars towed from their own apartment houses, is that nobody there gave them a rate sheet that would describe the exact the numbers that they would be charged if their vehicle was towed. They're required to do that. You, this committee, passed that law in 07. They are not complying with it. None of the people that called into Senator Gordley's office had received what's required in the law. Fair notice of the amounts that they could expect to be charged if their vehicle was towed from their own home. Parking permits that would identify their vehicle so that maybe the tow drivers would leave them alone. They haven't been given them that either. So, you have the statutory authority to act. You can see from the exhibit what we're really trying to get after here. Bring some order to the charges that they're charging people. And thank you so much for the invitation to speak today.
Thank you. Representative Riley, has Mr. Meyer spoke yet?
Yes.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate you participating in this public hearing. So next up, I have Russell Hickey, Kelly Ross, Jonathan Clay, and Jeff Asher.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kelly Ross, and I'm appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon Chapter of the Community Associations Institute and the Oregon Washington Community Association Managers. These are the folks and businesses that manage homeowners associations and condo owners associations around the state. They number in the tens of thousands of homeowners associations and condo associations. I'm glad to hear from Representative Riley that amendments are in the works on this. Would love to be a part of the work group. As I read the bill, the attempt here is to make a difference between proscribed property in subsection 1, section 1, and a parking facility in subsection 2. And I would draw your attention to a problem that the definition of proscribed property is very narrow. It basically only includes a single-family dwelling and a duplex. This bill would say that those are the only places where you can have a car towed without notice, and I would encourage the work group to expand on that definition a bit, that this doesn't allow any relief for folks in triplexes, fourplexes, condo buildings that may require identification stickers on the vehicles. You know, a number of instances. Love to be a part of the work group and help you flesh that out.
Thank you. Any of the rest of you want to testify?
Absolutely. Chair Hovland and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Jonathan Clay, and I'm a legislative advocate for Metro Multifamily Housing Association. We are a member of the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, as well as our association represents over 150,000 units throughout Oregon. I'm also speaking today for the Oregon Rental Housing Association. Today I wanted to address just a few elements of the bill that most concerns landlords. We're concerned with this section that requires the owner of the facility to be contacted in order to authorize a tow, and for that owner to personally affix the notice to the offending vehicle. We feel that that decision may ultimately be deferred to a property manager who may or may not live on site. Hard working folks work beyond 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and an unintended consequence of this bill renders those on-sites or the folks that don't even live on-site far more likely to be on call 24 hours a day to have to approve of the towings. Both residents and management of these communities benefit from allowing monitored towing without the grace periods that are presented in this bill. Monitored towing is typically appointed by property owners of to parking lots with chronic abusers. We're concerned that the grace period would render its parking policies obsolete for any two-hour period. For example, a vulnerable residents such as an elderly tenant unable to park in his assigned space from an unauthorized vehicle, the ability to monitor and remove that unauthorized vehicle before the designated vehicle of that rightful resident returns is a service that the apartment community expects, and it prevents a great inconvenience to that tenant. And thirdly, like in the city of Portland, Metro Multifamily Housing Association also supports requiring vehicles to be photographed before they are towed to establish their illegal location. We hope that this action could prove a greater credibility for the towing company. Please consider amending this bill to strike the two-hour wait period and consider the administrative overhead and overstretched capacity of having an owner or agent approve of each tow personally and by affixing that citation. I thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Chairman, my name is Jeff Asher. I represent BC Towing here in Salem, Oregon. We do pay by commission. One of the things that I want to draw out, commission works much easier for tracking time-wise because it's very hard to determine the start-stop times when the driver's getting up for different calls throughout the night. Also, many different travel clubs pay a variety of rates, and having to pay hourly could affect whether you want to service that club, which could leave some members stranded for their lower paying rate. You know, the drivers are gladly get up and they go on these different calls, but it could really affect the company's bottom line, whether you want to service certain people or not, or you might want to give up the 24-hour service. BC Towing, we do not do predatory towing. We do some private property impound limited, and I'm all for abolishing predatory. I think there's no point in this society to predatory, but I do believe the property owner does have a right to have a vehicle removed. And I had a couple of concerns here. One is the two-hour notice. Under a two-hour notice, and I'm glad to hear we're talking about the amendments, Mr. Riley, whether it be fire, but I'd also like to put other things. What if somebody parks and they're blocking other cars or the driveway? Now you have other members who maybe need to get to work, other doctor's appointments. They're blocked in for 2 hours while we wait the two-hour period to move that car. What about emergency vehicles trying to get through? I know that you're talking about some other amendments on that. What if an ambulance trying to get through a fire lane or a car that's sticking out into traffic gets blocking them in? I think the two-hour limit opens many hassles, and like you agreed when you talked about, there is a lack of parking places in here, and everybody needs to respect one another's rights. Just as the person who parks there needs to be respected, the person who has a right to park there needs to be respected. The owner of the property needs to have their respect. And so that was my point. The second one is I'd like to address, like was just said, having the owner having to be on site. I agree a representative needs to be on site. We need to have a representative of the property say, yes, I want that car removed. That does not need to be at the discretion of the tow company. That needs to be at the person who is in charge of that property has a right to say, yes, I want that vehicle removed. And that is addressed in their, I forget one of the statutes, still is today. But it does need to be there where the person who is representing that property says, yes, remove that car. And I don't believe they should have to wait 2 hours. The last example would be you come home, say, from watching a movie or down at the movies at 11 o'clock at night and somebody's in your parking place. Do you want to drive around downtown Salem or whatever community for 2 hours to wait for that timeline frame to expire so you can have your parking place and park at night without having to worry that somebody's going to have you towed in 2 hours because you take another person's spot? So I think we need to look at all those avenues. And I would be very much like to be a part of your committee if you have room for me here in Salem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great places.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Hi, I'm Russ. I'm with Retriever Towing out of Portland, Oregon. We've already beat to death the two-hour notice, so I'll go ahead and leave that alone. As to having to contact the owner of the facility before towing, it comes to a safety issue. At points and times, as you can imagine, we have violent confrontations. And we've always had the ability to tell them it was a contract tow and not that the owner called us. When we tell them the owner calls us, it redirects the anger. It really comes to a safety issue. A lot of these managers live on site. They've had their tires slashed. They've had their cars damaged. They've had their house broke into. If everyone knew that the manager had to authorize a prior to tow, that opens them up for retaliation. That's a scary thought. Section 3, paragraph 1, where it says owner or operator are present, police the vehicle at no charge. We've had situations recently where the vehicle was stolen. We've impounded 62 stolen cars on a patrol tow. We recovered the cars faster for the owner of the vehicle. But when the person who stole the car comes out and asks us to drop the car, we've refused to do that without proof of ownership. We just can't give the car back to anybody, even for $160, $200. If we do, we could be giving back a stolen car to a thief. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Appreciate your testimony today. Thank you very much. Next up, I have Sybil Hebb and Gaylin Cooper.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center here today. I wanted to speak on behalf of the Law Center and also as a member of the Oregon General Landlord-Tenant Coalition. And I wanted to take a minute just to tell you about what the coalition is. Some of you may know. It's a group made up of representatives of landlord interests as well as representatives of tenant interests that come together and meet on a monthly, sometimes weekly basis prior to each session to look at changes, proposed changes to the Landlord-Tenant Act in Oregon. And we have been meeting for about the past 25 years for the purpose of looking at the impact and changes to the Oregon Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. I've been a part of the group for the past 6 years. I think it's a really good group, and they provide a really good perspective from many different sides as to how the law works for landlords and for tenants. I want to speak on behalf of both the Oregon Law Center as well as the Landlord-Tenant Coalition in support of many of the principles underlying House Bill 2578, specifically as a representative of low-income tenants in Oregon. Our organization sees many examples in which predatory towing causes great harm and great injustice to our clients, and so we really appreciate the attempt to rein those practices in. We do want to raise a little bit of a concern, I think similar to what has been identified previously, but where there are landlord and tenant relationships and where there are tenant versus tenant relationships, it is sometimes important and necessary to have towing without notice. There are circumstances, as have been identified, where safety is at risk. There is also convenience, which is something that's really important to people who around their homes and their ability to access those homes and their parking spaces around their homes. But we also understand that there are times when towing without notice is not appropriate. And so we would respectfully request that the committee allow the Landlord-Tenant Coalition to bring its perspective and expertise to the issue of how these regulations would impact that particular very important relationship. The example of the elderly or disabled tenant coming home to park and finding that space unavailable is sort of the key, I think, example that we think of when we're needing to have quick and speedy towing of vehicles, as well as, of course, the emergency circumstances that have been mentioned. I do also just want to briefly point out that there is already some significant regulation with respect to residential landlord-tenant facilities and towing without notice that was passed by this committee and was the result of great work and leadership by Senator Gordley and Mr. Cruz and others, members of this committee, that already prohibit towing without notice on residential parking facilities in most circumstances. There are four exceptions that are carved out, and we, the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, put some thought into determining what those particular exceptions should be. If those need to be reevaluated and examined, then I think this is the perfect time for us to do that, and the coalition coalition, we would hope, would be the group that could provide some significant input onto that analysis. Whether that would be, you know, in the short term or in the longer term over the interim, I think, you know, is we're open to suggestion about that. But we certainly are interested and willing to provide feedback. And, again, just very much appreciate the committee's interest in this issue and focus on protection.
Thank you. Like to testify, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Galen Cooper, and I'm a consumer. I have a story. While going through a divorce, I lived a short time at Harmony Crossing Apartments in Kaiser, Oregon. The property is managed by SMI, or Shelter Management Incorporated. On August 17, 2008, at around 8:50 p.m., my 21-year-old daughter stopped by my apartment to say goodbye. She had a late-night flight scheduled to South Dakota to return back to college. She had borrowed her father's car and had parked in the visitor section of the apartment complex. At Harmony Crossing, we have a visitor's parking section, but we have no street parking. So she had just stopped off to make a short stop to say goodbye, kiss me goodbye. She parked in the visitor section. She left her luggage, her purse, and her airline ticket in the car. She ran in. We talked maybe 15 minutes at the most. We walked outside, and the car was gone. I immediately called the police thinking that the car was stolen, and the police recommended that maybe I might want to check with the property manager to see if it had been towed away. I couldn't understand that it would be towed away because it was in the visitor section, but I knocked on the manager's door. I had to pound on the door for a good 5 minutes. It was obvious that I had woke him up. The property manager asked me what time it was, and I answered that it was 10:15, and according to the manager, if it was after 10 p.m. and the car didn't have a permit that was visible, it was probably towed away, and that was even in the visitor section. He recommended that I call Bills and Brady Towing. Now, if you look at the parking complex, at the very start of the complex, there's a sign. It's unlit. Yes, it does. It is posted at the entry of the apartment complex that you need a parking permit between the hours of 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. But there's no signs in the visitor section and no signs inside the complex regarding a parking permit. Well, I called Bells and Brady Towing to inquire. At the time, the dispatcher had no information, but she called me back. The dispatcher called me 10 minutes later to confirm that the tow truck had the car in tow. According to the dispatcher, the tow driver would have the car at 1210 22nd Southeast in Salem, Oregon at 11:30 p.m., and that we would need to bring $345 cash before they would release the car. Now, for security purposes, my bank will not let me use the ATM over $200. So all I could get was $200 at the time, so I was frantically calling friends and family trying to come up with the difference. At 11:15, my daughter and I, Lindsay, arrived at the impound department. The business was closed. Of course, Lindsay's flight was scheduled to leave Portland at 11:15 p.m., 11:50. At 11:30 p.m., the dispatcher called and said that the tow driver was running late. At 11:55 p.m., I called the dispatcher inquiring on the tow driver. The dispatcher told me to be patient. The tow driver finally arrived at 12:04 with another car. And because it was after 12, the tow driver wanted to charge me another $45. When I looked at the invoice, I was charged $90 for towing my car from Kaiser out to South Salem right off of Mission. I was charged $40 for the one day, $50 for labor, $45 for a gate fee, $19.50 for the dispatch fee, and then $10 per mile. I paid an additional $100. So I paid the $345. But I only paid because Lindsay needed her purse and her belongings, and she needed to get back to school. Now, this ended up costing me an additional $845 for another flight to South Dakota so she could get back to school. We left the towing company a little after 1 a.m. And let me just say that because it was her father's car, it didn't help with my divorce either. While we were waiting for the car,
God almighty,
we saw a mother, and she was carrying her one-month-old baby and a four-year-old in tow. She had taken the bus to Mission Street, and at that time, it was like 11:50. She'd taken the bus to Mission Street, and she had walked in the dark all the way down to 22nd Street. It was raining slightly. The children were crying. Her car had been towed away. It had been parked in its spot. And the permit was in the car. But the tow driver could not see the permit. The driver wanted to charge her, or the driver requests that she pay the fee. She only had a credit card. The tow driver refused to release the woman's car until she paid the fees in cash. She had no cash. Now, while we were talking and while he was telling her this, we observed that there was three ATM, or not ATM, but I guess their electronic Visa sitting right there on the counter, but he would not use her credit card. We ended up that night, my daughter and I ended up driving the lady and her two children home. What's wrong with this picture? You know, who is this law protecting? You know, this lady was a single mother. There's elderly people. There's unemployed consumers. There's students. They're being harmed. These are the folks that don't carry an extra $345 cash. You know, my apartment complex never had a parking issue. So, Representative Wincard, we had no issue in regards to parking. Each tenant is assigned one or two parking spots. And then after this law passed, we all of a sudden had to have this parking permit along with the assigned spots. I paid $750 rent, but yet I'm not entitled to have any visitors after 10 p.m. Because of this incident, I've moved out of the apartment. But thank you very much, Representative Riley, for your new House bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Questions? Representative Wingard?
Gay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I just want to make sure I understand the last part of your letter. After the law passed, help me understand, did we pass a law that required your apartment complex to begin issuing permits?
My understanding is that I was told by the manager that we now had to have a parking permit placed in our window because of a new law.
Sybil, would you like to respond to that?
Representative Holvey, Representative Wingard, and members of the committee, I can offer a slight explanation. Last session, that when towing without notice was prohibited, one of the exceptions was that if a parking complex had a system of permits that made it clear that, you know, permits were available for tenants to use to show that they were in fact authorized to park on the complex. And so unless you had a system of permits that required, that was part of your rental agreement that, you know, tenants had notice of and then were issued the stickers, if you had that system in place and a person was parked in the parking complex without that permit, then towing without notice could occur only in those circumstances. So I think that may be what the manager may have been referring to.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you both coming forward with your testimony. I don't believe we have any more questions for you at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Jerry Finley and Bill Cross. Is he still here? And Larry Bricker. Welcome. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chairperson, Representative Riley, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Finley. I'm a billing manager in Portland. I work for a billing management company. I'm representing BOMA, Billing Owners and Management Association. I'll keep this short. There's nothing that I can add to the discussion that hasn't already been thrown in here today. We just want to make ourselves known that BOMA will be glad to sit on the committee and help work out any working issues with it. If you have any questions for me, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Larry Bricker. I'm employed with American Property Management in Portland, Oregon, and I'm also here to represent Metro Multifamily Housing Association. As a property manager, I have responsibilities to both the owner of the property as well as the residents of the property. And with both of those responsibilities, there are circumstances where towing without notice, I think, is necessary to fulfill those obligations, including to the residents, to make sure that they have the parking to which they're entitled. So to underscore that it is only in certain circumstances, in our particular case, we have approximately 2,500 apartments in the Portland area, mostly, and those are about 150 separate properties. And we use monitored towing at just 30 of those. So in my experience, it's just extreme circumstances that do require, in those circumstances, that towing without notice occur. In 2007, our association and myself participated in the towing work group that occurred, and we supported the changes that occurred then and still do, and find that they went a long way in providing some more protections, and some of those have been discussed today. But we do understand there are still concerns, so our association is eager to participate in the work group if we're invited, and have several ideas that we would hope to bring to the table to help provide further protections, but also to retain the ability to tow without notice in these certain circumstances. So. The hour's getting late. I've submitted written testimony. Just to highlight quickly, there are a number of the portions of the bill that we do support, and I just thought I'd mention those. We do support the releasing of a vehicle when the owner is present. In my experience in Portland, where that is the ordinance, that does diminish the number of contested tows or certainly contentious situations on site that often make it into the media. In my opinion, if that had been the case of the ordinance in the surrounding metro area of Portland, several of the high-profile tows and those circumstances would not have occurred because that dropping a vehicle would be very helpful. We do support earlier the idea of a photograph being required in a tow situation. We support that. That's not a current part of the bill, but we'd recommend it. It is also the case in Portland. I think that would further hold the driver accountable and make the circumstances less subjective. He'd have to be able to support the reasons for that tow, and the picture would go a long way. As a property manager, I like to see those pictures when those occur, and I think that would be useful. We do support, as part of the previous legislation in last session, a required written agreement between the tower, the property manager, and the resident. And our company drafted an agreement that complies with those regulations, and I think it's been effective. It very clearly spells out why a resident or guest might be towed without notice, and it specifies that in bold print and other information that was required. And I think that, again, a written agreement that's very clearly presented to the resident can go a long way in eliminating problems. And then briefly, areas that we oppose would be a grace period and would be a requirement to notify the property owner or manager. Again, many property owners aren't on site. The property manager may be on site but may not be reachable right at the moment where tow situations occurring. And we do think, again, that through some of the things that have been proposed, the written agreement, that the tow company would be implementing policy spelled out in this contract and wouldn't just be subjectively towing cars. So we would oppose a grace period. And I guess I'll conclude there, and thank you for the opportunity, and I could answer any questions if there were any.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate you hanging around and getting your perspective on the record. Questions from the committee? Not seeing any at this time. Again, I appreciate everyone that's shown up to testify. I believe I have exhausted my list of people that have signed up to testify tonight, and I'm certain that Representative Riley will take suggestions that he's heard here and the other suggestions in the work group and try to work out a bill that does accomplish a certain goal without hopefully negatively impacting unduly the industry that's out there providing a service. So with that, I would close the public hearing on House Bill 2578. Committee, our agenda for Friday, we will have a committee hearing on Friday. We will be hearing House Bill 2141. Just a heads up, and we'll see you at 3 o'clock on Friday.
Sir.
I adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.